Hello out there in internet land, and welcome once again to the D&D podcast. I'm Mike Merles, and filling in for Jeremy Crawford this week is Rodney Thompson.
Hello, internet land. Yes, I am filling in for Jeremy. Big shoes to fill.
Very big shoes to fill. Jeremy had to go to the dentist today, and his entire face was paralyzed by a Novocaine.
Right, and we also thought that, you know, if we brought Jeremy in here, he would want to talk exclusively about his trip to the dentist, and we thought we'd save you from that. Though he did have an interesting idea for the ecology of the cavity creep, So
yeah, we had to kind of hold him back there. So this is our last podcast for 2010. We're recording this on December 10th, and it should go up sometime next week. So we're going to talk a little bit about the year in review, talk a little bit about the holidays, and talk a little bit about what's coming up next year with the podcast. So sit back, relax, and here we go. So 2010 is drawing to a close. Mm-hmm. So Rodney, in the past year, any projects stand out in particular, the things you've worked on?
Well, this year we actually saw the launch of the Dark Sun campaign setting, and while I did most of the work on that back in 2009, it finally debuted this year, and of course, in the lead-up to its launch this year, I was doing a little bit of work here and there, going over galleys late in the process and making sure that everything came out right. So it was actually really probably one of the most fun projects I've worked on here at Wizards, getting to see that campaign setting come back from second edition and getting to help usher that through the entire process from its early inception all the way to the point where we had the books in our hands on the way to Gen Con. So I would say as much as I've enjoyed the work on Essentials and everything like that, Dark Sun was really, I felt like it was one of those projects that I really got to do some of the things that I'd always wanted to do, right? I mean, Dark Sun being a classic setting, it was a little bit of self-indulgence in a lot of ways, because I got to see that campaign setting shape up under the new rules in the way that I wanted to see it shape up while still maintaining a lot of that classic feel and flavor. So I'm going to go with Dark Sun is probably my favorite, and Monster Vault was probably my second favorite project of the year. So those two were right at the top of my list. What about you?
It's interesting because I transitioned just about the time I finished up the Essentials design. I transitioned from being a designer to being a manager.
Right.
So it's a little weird how a lot of the things that I think of as important achievements or things that are memorable aren't stuff you, like, any listener is going to see for at least a couple of years.
Right.
So it's really the difference, between starting, bringing the project to a close, designing it, developing it, editing it, looking at the galleys, to a more big picture, this is what I think we should be doing directionally. And I think what I've learned, though, is that if you look at D&D as a whole, we have a lot more in common between different groups than we have differences between us.
Right.
And I think that at this point, people tend to emphasize the differences. They think, well, I don't like hack and slash gaming. This is how I like to play D&D. Or I only like to play in Forgotten Realms and everything else is lame.
Right.
And I think that's something you see a lot more of nowadays than maybe you saw before the internet, when it was a little more difficult to meet large numbers of gamers.
Right.
I mean, in the 80s and in the 90s, when I was growing up and playing D&D, the only time I met large numbers of other gamers were at conventions.
Right.
And now that we have all this extra time to sit and just talk about gaming on the internet, I think you do see a lot more specialization, I guess I'd say. So in a way, that's kind of interesting. But it's interesting to look at the things that tie us together as D&D fans and the D&D community as a whole. And that's kind of what I look forward to, is like a challenge of, well, how do you bring that entire community together across all editions, across all settings, across all play styles? And so I guess for me, that's kind of the exciting thing. But that's really more of a future thing.
Sure.
I mean, as far as projects go for this year, I had to really think back to the beginning of the year when I was still doing design. Actually, this may sound kind of funny, but the one I looked forward to most as far as the release goes was probably Gamma World.
Hmm.
I didn't do actually much of the design work on that,
right,
but I was on board when we first started coming up with some of the ideas. And it was exciting seeing like the basic idea of the setting come together, of this shift in the event that created Gamma World, going from this sort of atomic war and with mutagens and stuff to this kind of like, well, the Large Hadron Collider was in the news at the time and kind of working that into it, this idea of a technology that just kind of makes all these realities collapse.
Right.
And it's been really neat seeing people take that and run with it and see that as a really interesting way. It's a different spin on Gamma World, but I think for a lot of people it's one that makes sense and fits. That may have changed, but it hasn't really altered the core of the game. in some ways, for some people, it's opened up even more possibilities of how they approach it.
Of course.
So that was interesting. Again, that wasn't necessarily a design thing. That was more of a team effort to come up with some ideas and bounce them around. But it was gratifying to see that do well and people seem open to it.
Yeah, mentioning Game World, actually, it reminds me of something that happened this year, I think, or at least that the fans got to see happen, that has really altered the way we think about our own game. And that's, you look at releases like Gamma World, and then back to Player's Handbook 3, and then the release of the Essentials line, 4th edition really grew and stretched a lot this year, right? You look at Gamma World is built on that 4th edition chassis, and you can actually take 4E monsters and use them in Gamma World, but it's a very different kind of game. And so I think it showed us how strong some of the underlying systems are in 4th edition, and then also how far we can reach in different directions, either towards, you know, new ways of doing classes like we did in PH3 and in Essentials, all the way out to, you know, new formats for products like, you know, Gamma World's a single box game, gives you everything you need to play. I think that it showed that there's a lot more to the system and you know, to D&D than we'd stretched out and tried to explore before. And so that was kind of an exciting thing. Finally, people got to see these things that we'd been working on, these sort of experimental projects that we've been working on. And now, going forward, we've evolved the game, or at least our understanding of the game, to the point where we can continue to do these sort of surprising, interesting things and have a little bit of experience at doing that under our belt.
So getting beyond work,
right?
were there any games that came out this year, any role-playing products, any board games? What to you were the highlights of the year?
So this year I actually got to pick up quite a few games and either play them or buy them at Gen Con. And I think one of my favorite games of the year was actually a superhero game called Icons. And I know I've talked about it before in our, you know, the design pit and everything, but Icons is it's a pretty small and simple superhero game, and it relies heavily on rolling up your characters randomly, very Villains and Vigilantes in that aspect, but it's got this very interesting system behind it where the DM doesn't actually roll any dice. Everything's on the player's side, and so the DM is just responsible for basically adjudicating the challenges and saying, here's what's happening in the world. And so I picked up Icons this year and really have enjoyed reading through it a lot and playing it and rolling up characters. I mean, there's this certain appeal to, all right, let's roll up the character randomly and see what kind of story I can piece together. And sometimes it can be pretty ridiculous, but other times it's you know, you really create this character that gels and you're like, wow, this seems like it'd be awesome to play. I wish I wasn't just rolling these characters up to see what I get, right? So I think it was a neat mix of that very classic sort of high randomness style, but also pushing games and pushing the genre in a lot of different directions. And it's got it's shaped in the same size as a graphic novel, and it's, you know, about the same thickness. So it definitely gets that comic book feel coming across pretty well. So that was probably one of my favorite games that I picked up this year from the role-playing side of things. In board games, I have totally been sucked into the Eurogame scene. I picked up a game called Hansa Teutonica, which is this game about becoming a merchant in the Hanseatic League. And it's, like many Euro games, it's a very low-conflict game, but it's actually got some really elegant, interesting mechanics in it that have drawn me in and have helped me addict several of my friends to it as well. So, you know, obscure games like that have certainly found their way onto my bookshelf this year. I also picked up the Death Angel, the Space Hulk card game this year, and have finally gotten to play that a few times. I love cooperative games, so any kind of cooperative game like a Shadows Over Camelot or something like that always draws me in. And it's great because the Death Angel game, it comes in a small box and it's very portable, and at the same time it's pretty easy to play anywhere you want to take it. So it's this good little cooperative game. Of course, you're, you know, space marines basically, and you're fighting against gene stealers and this old hulking spaceship that you're exploring. It's got a lot of replay value, so that's another one that I picked up this year. Just basically, I'm always kind of constantly on the lookout for things that have interesting new mechanics that I can learn from, but that are also easy to take around with me and play anywhere. And going back to Icons for a second, that's something I love about Icons, is it's a low-prep game. It's a very easy game to carry around. Like I say, it's about the size of a comic book, and it's one of those games that's very convenient for me to just take on the road. And, hey, you guys want to play some Icons? All right, let's roll up some characters. All right, 5 minutes later, we're ready to go. I mean, Gamma World's the same way, right? It's got that pick-up-and-play aspect to it that I really think is a nice trend in role-playing games, because traditionally you think of a role-playing game and there's a lot of prep work involved, and you know, making characters can be a couple-hour process sometimes. But with a few more role-playing games that are faster and easier to get into and faster for the DM to start running, it means that role-playing games become one of those games that can be a pickup game. Like, oh, what do you guys want to do tonight? Well, let's play, you know, some Gamma World. Let's play some Icons. I really like that aspect of it. It sort of propels them into the same category as board games.
Yeah, I played Death Angel myself. I bought it at Gen Con.
Right.
And I definitely liked it. I used to play Space Hulk, the original board game, which I think had a re-release last year.
Right.
And I thought it did a good job of capturing that feel. As far as other games, there's a new Halo game came out this year.
That's true.
Which I played the heck out of, Halo Reach.
That's right.
And other than that, let's see, I'm trying to think of other, as far as role-playing games go, I always like the sort of the old school kind of feeling, especially the D&D clones. So I've been kind of following some of that. There was a game, it's a mouthful of a name, but it's called Lamentations of the Flame Princess.
Yes, I actually saw it at Gen Con. It looks really interesting.
It's a box set. It comes with a lot of stuff, a number of adventures. It even comes with a pencil and dice and everything. It's a complete box. It's very ambitious. You know, it's really interesting because it's a one-man operation, I believe headquartered in Norway. Mm-hmm. And usually when you see a small press publisher, they're content to do a small book. You know, a single book, 64 pages or 128 pages.
Sure.
And, you know, it's something maybe they're printing off through Lulu or on-demand, print-on-demand website.
Right.
So it's sort of interesting and inspiring in a way to see this small press, it's one guy, making a box set with all these components and a complete game. And so I think it's good to see that kind of ambition in RPGs. I think sometimes people sort of shy away from shooting for the moon. They're just kind of content to do something small.
Well, you know, this year has seen a lot of that old school revolution going on. So it's interesting to see how, you know, this old school revolution has picked up. There's lots of retro clones showing up that are really good. And it's actually creating a little bit of competition in that retro clone market so that people are starting to put out more and more really interesting and, like I said, ambitious things that is really nice to see in a market that could have been just sort of niche, a niche hobby.
Yeah. And this is another nice thing, too, to see with role-playing games. You mentioned getting into a game in a half hour. That's something we did with Essentials, with the emphasis on box sets.
Right.
But we've seen other publishers do it. Now, actually, this is a game that I believe came out late 2009, but there's the Doctor Who role-playing game from Cubicle 7. That was a box set. And it's very much aimed at – it has pre-generated characters. It's aimed at you can just buy this, open it up, and start playing very quickly.
Right.
And I think that's a good trend. I think RPGs, you know, when you look back at the RPGs in the early 80s, they have 32-page rule books. You know, AD&D First Edition was considered the most complicated game around, which is interesting if you look at it today. The rules load of First Edition is nothing compared to modern D&D.
Right.
You know, and I think that's something which, we really try to do with the Red Box and with the Essentials line, is to create an experience where people have an easier in for RPGs.
Sure.
And I think that's something that the hobby as a whole has suffered from for quite a while now. Unless someone's teaching you a game, it's hard to get into it. It's hard to just pick up a role-playing game rulebook and teach yourself how to play. Right. You know, there are a lot of barriers. It's obvious there's a lot of work between you starting the process and then ending the process. It takes a lot of effort, as say compared to a video game,
right,
where you just start playing immediately, or a board game where in 10 minutes you can start playing.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's been good to see the return to that, and you know, publishers becoming aware of that and trying to address it.
Yeah, it's nice when you have that option at the very least, right? I mean, sometimes you want that more complex game that you do a lot of prep work for and that you spend a lot of time planning out your game, and then sometimes you just want something you can pick up and go with, either because you haven't had time to prep or maybe you didn't expect to play that night and all of a sudden, you know, you're jumping into it. So more variety of types of games in role-playing games, I think, is always a good thing.
You didn't mention any digital games. I mentioned Halo Reach.
Yes.
There have been a few other digital games I got into this year, but I heard that recently there's a new World of Warcraft expansion released.
That is true, yes.
And have you been playing that, or?
Sadly, yes. Warcraft, once again, has its talons buried in me. I actually, before I started working at Wizards, I played a lot of World of Warcraft with my friends. We had a big guild. It was all my friends back in Tennessee that we would play together. And when I moved out here, I had more people to play role-playing games with, more people to play board games with, and I sort of fell away from it. Well, that was 4 years ago, right? I haven't played the game in 4 years, and then Jeremy actually was, you know, he was getting excited about Cataclysm and talking about it. And I was like, well, maybe I'll fire it up and see how it looks when the new stuff comes out. And it for now has its claws back in me. It's, you know, I like certain aspects of the experience. I really like the social side of it. Like, I like the fact that I can hop on and play the game with my brother back in Tennessee, or that my girlfriend and I can come home at night, eat dinner, and then hop on and play for a couple of hours. I like that cooperative aspect of it. I mean, I talked about it with board games, but I like that in computer games too. And so when I look at something that I can play cooperatively for as long as I can with WoW, certainly it's got some big appeal there. I mean, there's still a lot of things that either I'm not crazy about or that I've tried and feel like I've sort of done that, but there's a breadth of experience there. So, you know, we'll see how long I stick with it. I managed to escape for, like I say, 4 years, but up to this point, I think they've really done a great job of revamping the game and sort of highlighting the things that I like. I like questing, and I like the lore. Like, I'm really into the lore of the Warcraft universe, because I used to play Warcraft 1 and 2 and 3, the real-time strategy games. And so they've really done a great job of bringing that to the forefront more, and it's not just about, you know, running around and interacting with annoying players that I don't know. It's about, you know, me and my brother and me and my girlfriend going through these storylines that feel like they progress the world. So they've really stepped up their game there, and I'm pretty impressed so far.
So that's the year that was in terms of games. What about things that are coming out in the future? Is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to, be it books, games, movies, or anything?
Well, when it comes to books, I have recently started reading a lot more recently released fantasy novels. I did for a while there, and then I got into some really classic stuff. I read a lot of Robert E. Howard and Jack Vance and stuff like that. And that's actually what sort of occupied my reading list for the last year or so. But recently I've started reading things like there's a series by Joe Abercrombie called The First Law Trilogy that I read, and I've sort of gotten back into the more recent stuff. And so next year we're going to see the release of several more books by authors I like. I know that Patrick Rothfuss, who wrote this really interesting book called The Name of the Wind, the second book's coming out in that series. And then the third book in Scott Lynch's Lies of Loch Lomora series, which is sort of a high fantasy version of Ocean's 11 in a lot of ways, you know, very scoundrels stealing things and coming up with elaborate plans. I'm looking forward to those, because finally getting the next book in those series next year. I think we might even get the next book in the Wheel of Time series, or at least the last book in the Wheel of Time series next year. I should have mentioned that as one of my favorites from this year was the second to last book in the Wheel of Time series came out this year, and I read that. And I have stuck with that series through thick and thin, and am glad to see it coming to an end. But at the same time, I'm sad, because it's really, I mean, since the last book came out, not the most recent one, but the one before that, it's really kicked it up a notch. But the next one's coming out next year, so I'm looking forward to that. There's a lot of good books coming out next year, so I'm pretty excited about that. On the digital games front, I also recently played Batman Arkham Asylum for the first time, and the sequel to that should be coming out next year. That was a fantastic game. Just awesome storytelling from beginning to end. And what I loved about it was they got the voice actors from the animated series to voice the characters. It's Mark Hamill as the Joker, Kevin Conroy as Batman, and I'm a huge sucker for good voice acting. So we'll get the sequel to that next year. So even more of Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill in those roles. So I'm looking forward to those. It's not next year, but there's a game being printed by, I think, Valley Games called Stronghold that looks really interesting. It's already been published once, and it was published in very limited run, and it's basically two teams. One team controls the Stronghold, the other team is trying to invade it. And it's got a really nice, beautiful board, really great components, and a really interesting sort of exchange, because the actions of one faction generate actions for the other faction. And so there's some really interesting stuff there. That one's actually already out or out coming out soon. So I'm kind of hoping that one of my relatives might listen to this podcast and get me that for Christmas. But it, you know, there's a few other board games coming out like that that I'm pretty interested in as well. So, yeah, a lot to look forward to in the next year. And I'd love to say all the things that we're putting out that I'm looking forward to for next year. Unfortunately, they haven't been announced yet, so we can't actually talk about them. All right, how about you? What are you looking forward to?
So on the book front, I've actually started reading some of the more classic, the classics of science fiction, I guess. And when I say classic, I'm like the 1860s or whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like Jules Verne. I started reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I want to read more like Alexander Dumas, things like that.
Right.
I'm trying to get more into the classics, kind of trace how fantasy and science fiction started and where it went. So that's obviously there aren't too many living authors I'll be reading.
Yeah, nothing new to look forward
to. Yeah, exactly. Board gaming wise, Fantasy Flight is releasing another Call of Cthulhu board game called Mansions of Madness.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick that one up and check it out. I'm excited about it. I'm not sure when it's coming out, though. I don't think it's coming out before Christmas. It might be after Christmas.
Maybe.
I have not seen it in stores. I don't think I've heard anything about it being released.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that one. I like Arkham Horror okay, so I'm willing to give them, you know, the benefit of the doubt on that one. But everything I've seen about Mansion of Madness actually makes it look like, you know, kind of an interesting pseudo role-playing game in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Which you can say the same about Arkham Horror too, right?
Yeah.
But I think Mansion of Madness looks really interesting.
So I'm looking forward to that in terms of board games. In terms of digital games, I think Dragon Age 2 comes out next year. So I'll be checking that out. I really enjoyed Mass Effect. I still haven't played Mass Effect 2. My Xbox red-ringed recently, and I just haven't had the time or energy to get it fixed.
Right.
So hopefully by the time Dragon Age 2 comes out, I'll have...
You know, Microsoft, like, 30 miles up the road, you can't get your Xbox fixed.
Well, I can box it up. And you don't just drive it up there and hand it to somebody.
You don't knock on Bill Gates' door and like, excuse me, sir, I need this repaired.
I probably should. I actually have a friend who... I have several friends who work at Microsoft. I should get one of them to fix it.
There you go.
Because everyone who works at Microsoft knows how to fix an Xbox.
It's part of their basic training.
Exactly. It's what they learned in first week of training. So talk about books, video games, obviously. What about movies like Tron? The Tron movie is coming out the 17th.
I cannot wait for that movie. I'm a total 80s science fiction goob, right? So the other day I was, you know, quoting The Last Starfighter to my girlfriend, and she was like, you are a crazy man. So I'm really looking forward to Tron. I picked up the soundtrack on Amazon because they had a special going. So if Tron is not the greatest movie of the year, it's possible that my soul will be crushed. So...
And then for Nick, now what movies are coming out next year? We have The Hobbit doesn't come out for like 8, 10 years or something.
Next
like that.
Year is the year of the superhero movie, right? We got Green Lantern.
Okay, Green Lantern,
right? And Captain America and Thor as well. There's a lot of good, well, knock on wood, good.
Yeah, because this year looked like it should have been good for movies, but then we got a lot of ones that just seemed to come to disappoint.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the Marvel superhero movies. And digital gaming wise, Dragon Age 2. And you know, other than that, there isn't too much. Video game-wise, it's really leaping out at me.
Part of it for me also depends on whether or not BioWare actually gets out the Old Republic game, because I actually got to play the Old Republic at PAX this year, and it was awesome. I mean, you know me in Star Wars, and obviously I'm at least MMO-friendly, right? If that game comes out this year, there's a good chance you won't see me for a month, because that will definitely suck me into its addiction vortex.
So that was Rodney's view on what was cool in 2010 and what he's looking forward to in 2011. I've had my chance to put in my two cents. And now we're going to talk to a couple of different people from around R&D. Joining me now is Chris Perkins.
Hello.
Chris, what from 2010 was cool? What are you asking for the holidays or just in general? What was neat about the past year?
Let's see. On the D&D front, what was neat about the past year was getting to explore the Paragon tier in my campaign and getting the characters to Epic, which I've been looking forward to for some time because that's when all the big stories get to play out. So I'm really jazzed about that and looking forward to wrapping up the Epic tier next year with my two game groups. And I think with all the surprises and stuff in store, it will be a truly memorable experience for them, I hope.
Cool. Is there anything as far as movies or books in the past year that really stood out for you or games or anything?
Let's see. On the movie front, How to Train a Dragon was a big deal for me. I think that some of the best writing in cinema these days is in animated features. And so I'm really keen on seeing if they do a sequel for that. And I love the take, how they sort of defined their universe. It was all beautifully done, beautifully written. In terms of video games and stuff like that, there was a big, long build-up for me to seeing the Cataclysm release for WoW. I am very much into world exploration, so that was sort of the big draw for me, and all the little teases that they rolled out about the world were very interesting, and I get to experience that now over the Christmas break.
So that was 2010. How about what are you looking forward to in 2011?
The reunion of Acquisitions Incorporated. I'm looking forward to getting those guys back together. Anybody who was at the PAX show knows that there's some unfinished business there and lots of potential for character development. We'll try to get the gang together at least one more time next year.
Cool. Well, that was Chris Perkins offering his insights to 2010 and what he's looking forward to 2011. And joining us now, someone I'm going to pose the same questions to, is Greg Bilsland. Hey, Greg.
Hi there.
So tell me, in 2010, what were the highlights for you as far as games, movies, books, or anything? What was it that made 2010 cool?
Oh, I would say for me, one of the highlights was movies, actually. I had a really enjoyed Avatar movie and looking forward to getting that for Christmas, hopefully. In terms of games... Oh, let's see. I tried a number of things at Gen Con. I would have to say trying out Dominion a little bit was one of the exciting new, well, I guess, relatively new games that was coming out. What else? For me personally, I was really excited to see Monster Manual 3 coming out. I worked on that back in 2009, and it was kind of nice to reap the rewards of all that work.
All right, so how about 2011? Anything you're looking forward to? What's new on the horizon that you can't wait to get your hands on?
One of the games I'm really looking forward to trying out is the new Dragon Age, actually. I've been watching BioWare and seeing what they've done. I'm a big fan of Mass Effect. I'm hoping to get some news on that, seeing if they're going to put out Mass Effect 3 next year. But particularly Dragon Age 2, because I like a lot of what I'm reading about all the changes that they're going to be making. It sounds like it's going to be a lot. It's going to be focused on one character and be more in the Mass Effect vein. As for D&D, I'm really hoping to go to some more conventions. I've been working a lot on our organized play programs, and I'm looking forward to going to encounters and trying out some of the new releases we've got out. Can't say too much about those yet. And in terms of movies, some of the comic book movies coming out. I think we've got Avengers coming out. Is it this year or is it?
It's Thor and Captain America.
Oh, right. Avengers is the subsequent year.
Yep.
But that's, both 2011 and 2012 are looking pretty good for geek movies.
Yeah. So we're very consistent here at Wizards of the Coast. Now, you didn't hear the other list people gave, but I think we mentioned the same six things three or four times, which I don't know if that says something. We need to broaden our horizons a little bit. I feel like I should just start throwing in, like, well, this is other, you know, some other things I want, just to diversify that list a little bit. But that's cool. I think it's kind of, you know, it's interesting as fantasy fans or just genre fans, there are certain events that unify fandoms. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of Wheel of Time fans out there.
Right.
A lot of World of Warcraft fans, Mass Effect. It's interesting how it seems nowadays in fantasy there is kind of that concentration of interest. You know, you don't have – I just remember when I was in the 80s, back when I met Apple IIc, there would be like Bard's Tale, Wizard's Crown. There were a lot more diversity in terms of fantasy gaming. And I'm not sure there are really that many – I mean, aside from the franchises, you see that many just kind of one-off random games. Like a Wizard's Crown. It was a fantasy role-playing game with this fairly detailed Rolemaster-esque system behind it and tactical combat that if you played PC games back in the 80s or Apple or whatever, computer games, its combat system was a precursor to the Gold Box D&D system. And so it's sort of interesting now that I think about it. I can't think of too many fantasy games that are role-playing games as opposed to action games that are coming out. I mean, I think it's something that's really, you think of Hollywood really focusing on sequels, on not, I don't want to say formula in a pejorative sense. I don't think, say, for example, a superhero movie is, there's a formula to it, but you can do very well with that formula. I thought Iron Man 2 was, I really liked that movie, liked Iron Man 1. There's kind of a formula there, but it's enjoyable, you know, so I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with following a formula. But it seems like that's something which you're increasingly seeing a franchise takes hold and then it just grows from there. As opposed to when the younger days of a genre, like, you know, computer games, there's a lot more diversity. I think there's a little more experimentation in a way because you're looking to try to find those formulas and find what's interesting. Anyways, I guess that's just my random philosophizing about you guys, your Christmas lists.
Well, I think that you're right about franchises. I think that especially in a world where franchises tend to cross all media boundaries, you're going to see a video game that's sort of transcending the boundaries, or a movie that or comic book franchise that's transcending the boundaries. And so there's a big push toward developing those franchises now. But what's nice is that you still don't know what's going to be the next big hit. I mean, if you had BioWare's put out some good games in the past, but I don't think that we would have known a few years ago that Mass Effect was going to be this big hit.
Yeah, especially as a science fiction role-playing game, which really you haven't seen traditionally in tabletop role-playing game. You have Traveler, which is a game that really had its peak of popularity in the early 80s. And then other than that, you've generally had licensed games like Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So actually, that was one of the things I really enjoyed about Mass Effect was exploring that universe. I like the free-form approach to it in some ways, where there was the main plot, but you could fly around the galaxy, explore planets. And I really liked, of all the games I've played, it's probably the one where I was the most immersed in the setting, where I just liked going to the planets and reading the text that described it. And I really like how they rewarded that with some really interesting stories. Like this just, you know, I remember reading the description of one planet and thinking this would make a great setting for a role-playing game adventure. Mm-hmm. You know, if they released a Mass Effect expansion, which was just you get to go to this planet and explore it, that sounds great. Or I'd want to just write that as a, you know, use some game system to run a tabletop version of it. So I think it's kind of cool to discover those franchises. In a way, I guess it's kind of neat to know there's a Mass Effect 2. There'll probably be other games in the series to look forward to. And I haven't played 2 yet, so I'm always like 9 months to a year behind everyone else. I always wait till the games become like budget titles, and that's when I buy them because I'm a cheap bastard. So. All right, so now taking a turn from behind the computer and moving behind the microphone is our own producer, Bart Carroll. So Bart, 2010, what was cool?
Analog games, the best game I played in 2010 was Munchkin Quest.
Oh,
I like the Munchkin games. Yeah. Have you ever played Munchkin?
I have played Munchkin, yes I have. I haven't played the board game yet, though.
In my mind, Munchkin is one of the better introductory products for D&D.
Yeah.
It gives you the races, it gives you the classes, it sort of gives you the fantasy trappings of all of that, and I think it's a great game for kids to learn D&D.
If I could just for a moment take a sidetrack, it's really interesting to think Steve Jackson, who started designing games, you know, he started out with the Fantasy Trip, a fantasy role-playing game in the 70s, mm-hmm. and I think of all the people working in tabletop gaming, he does not get enough credit for how diverse his designs are. He's designed GURPS, which is a very detailed, one of the most expansive role-playing games. On one hand, and on the other hand, and games like Ogre, which it's a war game, and you know this futuristic tank combat. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, he designs Munchkin, which is a very, I'd say it's more of a party social game. It's you know, and I think there's really something interesting there about being able to design that very wide range of games, game types.
Yeah, no, a very creative mind. So for anyone out there looking for a good D&D game for kids, I'd actually recommend Munchkin Quest. As far as movies, I've also been listening to everyone, and I'm surprised nobody mentioned Inception.
Oh, someone incepted me to forget about Inception, yeah, whatever right. You call that. That, you know, that was a great movie.
I thought that was the best movie I've seen. I've got high hopes for Tron as well. And as far as books, Les Grossman wrote a book called The Magicians, which I thought was a fantastic sort of survey of fantasy genre. It's a book. That sounds very familiar, about a boy who essentially goes to a magician school. But it's more for adults. It's almost like Holden Caulfield going to Hogwarts Academy.
Interesting.
So that's a good one. And for 2011, he has a sequel coming out called The Magician King that I'm looking forward to.
Cool.
And I haven't read it yet, but as far as what I am hoping for Christmas, China Mieville, another author. If you've ever read Perdido Street Station, The Scar, Iron Council. This is another of his books, not in that series, but there's nothing he writes that I'm not in love with. So he wrote a book this year called Kraken that I'm looking forward to.
So how about in the future, 2011?
All right, so the number one thing I'm looking forward to in 2011 will probably be a Super Bowl rematch between the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots.
Yes, which I'm sorry to say the Bears would not win.
But they're 1-0 in Super Bowls with the New England Patriots.
They're 1-0 in Super Bowls overall. True. The Patriots are admittedly 3-3 in Super Bowls, having had to endure going to 6 Super Bowls as opposed to 1.
My theory, they invented the T formation. They've got a new formation. It's probably based on another letter. They're just waiting to unleash.
They're waiting at the S formation.
Yes, yes.
The Z. You know, last year we made some football predictions. And if I remember correctly, did I predict Saints beating Colts in the Super Bowl, or did I get it reversed? Did I say heart says Saints, brain says Colts, I pick the Colts?
Wow. We'll check back.
We'll have to double check. So let's do this right now. So let's say, all kidding aside, unless that might be your Super Bowl prediction, which as a Bears fan you're allowed to make.
As a Bears fan, I'm used to my heart being broken every year.
I actually kind of, obviously, I'm a Patriots fan, now before anyone gets offended by that, because I know the Patriots are a good team to hate nowadays. I was rooting for the Patriots back in the 80s. I was rooting for them back when they were 1-15, the Rod Rust years. I remember I had this old transistor radio that would pick up the AM station that would broadcast Patriots games when they were blacked out, because they were always blacked out. They could never sell out a home game, especially in the early 90s before Robert Kraft bought the team. Mm-hmm. And I'd always be listening to this old crappy old transistor radio and listen to the Patriots either get mauled or blow it in the final minute. Those are your two choices. Except for some weird reason, when the Bills had their run of four Super Bowls in a row, the Patriots seemed like every year the Patriots would beat the Bills, like one of the two games. And it would be random if it was at home or away, never mattered. Just somehow, like they'd bring Steve Grogan out of retirement or something, or Doug Flutie would just happen to have a great game that day, and they would always manage to beat the Bills. So,
well, so my predictions, if the playoffs were tomorrow, or you know, however it panned out, I believe it will be Atlanta and New England in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And that's probably just a safe bet based on how they're playing right now.
All right, so here are my picks. Now, keeping my name a Patriots fan, but I'm going to throw a little curveball here. I don't think the Patriots are going to make it to the Super Bowl, because I still think that defense wins championships. The Patriots defense is getting better, and I love the Patriots. I'm going to root for them all the way. I hope they make it. I want to see them win another Super Bowl. It'd be fantastic. But I have a feeling that this is the year the Kansas City Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl, because that team in some ways reminds me of the 2001 New England Patriots.
It's an odd pick. I thought you were going to say Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
maybe
no.
Baltimore.
I just got a funny feeling with the Chiefs, the way they win, they have a great running game. Mm-hmm. They really just pound the ball. Castle is like an interesting quarterback, especially with Dwayne Bowe, that's his name. It's like, I was just thinking it was Rainbow.
He's on my fantasy team.
They've got a guy, their defense is looking pretty good. I just got a funny feeling that Kansas City is one of those teams that's going to get in the playoffs and then just suddenly start winning games. So I said, I'd love to see the Patriots go, but I'm going to pick the Chiefs out of the AFC. And then for the NFC, I think the NFC is really interesting, because I know everyone's picking the Falcons. I have a feeling the Packers are going to finally get their act together, because that's a team that just has a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. If Green Bay gets on a hot streak, I think they can go all the way, and I think it'd be a classic rematch, Green Bay Packers versus Kansas City Chiefs. And I think in that game, I think the Packers win.
So now that we've gone completely further afield from D&D, you said you had one more thing.
I have a Christmas-themed blast from the past. I'm going to be right back. I have to go get something. I'll be right back. And this might be purely personal, but I'm just going to show off. I got to show this off. And it's going to be visual, which is a little irritating about me, but Bart will take a picture and I'll put it up on the web. So I found an interesting box. We here have a game library. And one of the things that has been going on the past few months, apparently when TSR was bought by Wizards of the Coast, there was an archive of material left back in Wisconsin that is now being transported out to the West Coast, to here in Seattle. And today, and this may have been put in the archive earlier, but I happen to spot it today, was one of the greatest gifts I ever received as a 7 or 8 year old back in the early 80s. It's a giant box set called Dragon Riders of the Styx. And I don't know if anyone else out there ever was given this as a gift or whatever. It's a box, maybe it's about 2.5 feet long, by 1.5 feet wide.
And for those listening, we'll put the pictures up on the website so you can see what we're talking about.
And it's a fantasy playset with dragons, demons, and dungeons, which, oh, interesting, in 1981 or so, would have a dragon and a dungeon showing up in there. And it was a giant box with over 100 little plastic knights and monsters, had a plastic castle. And so I just saw this thing, and it took me back. It pulled me almost 30 years back. And I just had to share that. This is, you know, I had very understanding parents when I was a kid. I know some people in the early 80s, if they liked D&D, their parents freaked out and thought they were becoming Satanists. Mine went out and bought me stuff like Dragon Riders of the Styx and took me to see the Conan the Barbarian movie.
I remember this because I remember it had the vinyl mat.
Yes.
That you would put down.
Yep. It had the vinyl mat, and it had a little place where you'd put the castle. It had a little mountain thing, a plastic mountain thing you'd put together that the demons came out of. And this thing was just fantastic. And I'm sure if I was to search through my parents' attic, I'd find a bunch of these little figures stashed away up there.
Do you think they found the shortest kid they could for the box to make the map look as long as possible?
There's this hilarious picture of the front. Yeah, this kid playing it. Yeah, he is about 4 feet tall. Yeah, they must have just either found a small kid or dressed, because he's got like a button-up shirt, so they maybe took like a really young kid and like dressed him up like look older.
Exactly.
But yeah, so this was just a blast in the past. I thought I'd share. So I'm sure all of you out there, if you play D&D and you're a kid, you probably have some memories of the holidays or, you know, getting toys like this. So, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of which, this is our last podcast before the holidays. So for everyone celebrating, hopefully they've got some goodies under the tree as well.
Yeah.
I remember 1983, I had the Redbox starter set as one of my Christmas presents.
All right, it's cool. See, I never got that. I got for Christmas, I was already playing D&D when the Redbox came out.
We were playing, my friends and I were playing made-up rules with Monopoly dice.
Oh, wow.
Because the older kids were playing D&D, and yeah. So we wanted to play D&D.
You didn't have the dice, yeah.
Didn't have the dice. So the red box was especially meaningful.
So, yeah. And if I understand, too, we're kind of looking at maybe making some changes to the podcast for next year. We didn't really go into details, but we're going to kind of think of how can we be more relevant to what you guys want to hear.
Yeah, change the format up a little.
Yeah, so we're going to try to figure out, you know, how we want to present things going forward. And that applies to a lot of the stuff we're looking at as far as how we're interacting with fans. I kind of talked about the beginning of the podcast. You know, bringing all fans of D&D together. And I think that's something that's kind of like a personal mission for me now. And we probably won't just come up with a great idea on our own. It's going to involve reaching out and talking to people. So we'll see where that goes. So I guess that about wraps up 2010 in podcasts. I'd appreciate everyone who's been listening and who's been playing D&D and who's been hanging in there with us. On behalf of Bart, Rodney, Chris, and Greg, thanks for listening, and have a happy holiday, and have a prosperous 2011.